Chapter 4 The Field of Cormallen. All about the hills the hosts of Mordor raged. The captains of the west were foundering in a gathering sea. The sun gleamed red, and under the wings of the Nazgul the shadows of death fell dark upon the earth. Aragorn stood beneath his banner, silent and stern, as one lost in thought of things long past or far away. But his eyes gleamed like stars that shine the brighter as the night deepens. Upon the hilltop stood Gandalf, and he was white and cold, and no shadow fell on him. The onslaught of Mordor broke like a wave on the beleaguered hills, voices roaring like a tide amid the wreck and crash of arms. As if to his eyes some sudden vision had been given, Gandalf stirred, and he turned, looking back north where the skies were pale and clear. Then he lifted up his hands and cried in a loud voice ringing above the din, "The eagles are coming!" And many voices answered, crying, "The eagles are coming! The eagles are coming!" The hosts of Mordor looked up and wondered what this sign might mean. There came Gwaihir the Windlord, and Landrobal his brother, greatest of all the eagles of the north, mightiest of the descendants of old Thorondor, who built his eyries in the inaccessible peaks of the encircling mountains when Middle-earth was young. Behind them, in long swift lines, came all their vassals from the northern mountains, speeding on a gathering wind. Straight down upon the Nazgul they bore, stooping suddenly out of the high airs, and the rush of their wide wings as they passed over was like a gale. But the Nazgul turned and fled, and vanished into Mordor's shadows, hearing a sudden, terrible call out of the dark tower. And even at that moment all the hosts of Mordor trembled. Doubt clutched their hearts, their laughter failed, their hands shook and their limbs were loosed. The power that drove them on and filled them with hate and fury was wavering. Its will was removed from them. And now, looking in the eyes of their enemies, they saw a deadly light and were afraid. Then all the captains of the west cried aloud, for their hearts were filled with a new hope in the midst of darkness. Out from the beleaguered hills, knights of Gondor, riders of Rohan, Dúnedain of the north, close-serried companies, drove against their wavering foes, piercing the press with a thrust of bitter spears. But Gandalf lifted up his arms and called once more in a clear voice, "Stand, men of the west, stand and wait. This is the hour of doom." And even as he spoke, the earth rocked beneath their feet. Then rising swiftly up, far above the towers of the Black Gate, high above the mountains, a vast soaring darkness sprang into the sky, flickering with fire. The earth groaned and quaked. The towers of the teeth swayed, tottered, and fell down. The mighty rampart crumbled. The Black Gate was hurled in ruin. And from far away, now dim, now growing, now mounting to the clouds, there came a drumming rumble, a roar, a long echoing roll of ruinous noise. "The realm of Sauron is ended," said Gandalf. "The Ring-Bearer has fulfilled his quest." And as the captains gazed south to the land of Mordor, it seemed to them that, black against the pall of cloud, there rose a huge shape of shadow, impenetrable, lightning-crowned, filling all the sky. Enormous it reared above the world, and stretched out towards them a vast threatening hand, terrible but impotent. For even as it leaned over them, a great wind took it, and it was all blown away and passed. And then a hush fell. The captains bowed their heads, and when they looked up again, behold, their enemies were flying, and the power of Mordor was scattering like dust in the wind, as when death smites the swollen, brooding thing that inhabits their crawling hill and holds them all in sway. Ants will wander witless and purposeless and then feebly die. So the creatures of Sauron, orc or troll or beast spell-enslaved, ran hither and thither mindless, and some slew themselves, or cast themselves in pits, or fled wailing back to hide in holes and dark, lightless places far from hope. But the men of Rûn and of Harad, Easterling and Southron, saw the ruin of their war and the great majesty and glory of the captains of the West. And those that were deepest and longest in evil servitude, hating the West, and yet were men proud and bold, in their turn now gathered themselves for a last stand of desperate battle. But the most part fled eastward as they could, and some cast their weapons down and sued for mercy. Then Gandalf, leaving all such matters of battle and command to Aragorn and the other lords, stood upon the hilltop and called, and down to him came the great eagle, Gwaihir the Windlord, and stood before him. "Twice you have borne me, Gwaihir, my friend," said Gandalf. "Thrice shall pay for all, if you're willing. You will not find me a burden much greater than when you bore me from Zirax-Igil, where my old life burned away."
"I would bear you," answered Gwaihir, "whether you will, even were you made of stone."
"Then come, and let your brother go with us, and some other of your folk who is most swift, for we have need of speed greater than any wind, outmatching the wings of the Nazgûl."
"The north wind blows, but we shall outfly it," said Gwaihir,
and he lifted up Gandalf and sped away south. And with him went Landrevel and Meneldor, young and swift. And they passed over Udûn and Gorgoroth, and saw all the land in ruin and tumult beneath them, and before them Mount Doom blazing, pouring out its fire.
"I am glad that you are here with me," said Frodo. "Here at the end of all things, Sam."
"Yes, I'm with you, master," said Sam, laying Frodo's wounded hand gently to his breast. "And you're with me, and the journey's finished. But after coming all that way, I don't want to give up yet. It's not like me, somehow, if you understand."
"Maybe not, Sam," said Frodo. "But it's like things are in the world. Hopes fail, an end comes. We have only a little time to wait now. We're lost in ruin and downfall, and there's no escape."
"Well, master, we could at least go further from this dangerous place here, from this crack of doom, if that's its name.
Now, couldn't we? Come, Mr. Frodo, let's go down the path at any rate."
"Very well, Sam. If you wish to go, I'll come," said Frodo. And they rose and went slowly down the winding road, and even as they passed towards the mountain's quaking feet, a great smoke and steam belched from the Samathnaur, and the side of the cone was riven open, and a huge fiery vomit rolled in slow, thunderous cascade down the eastern mountainside. Frodo and Sam could go no further. Their last strength of mind and body was swiftly ebbing. They had reached a low, ashen hill piled at the mountain's foot, but from it there was no more escape. It was an island now, not long to endure, amid the torment of Orodruin. All about it the earth gaped, and from deep rifts and pits smoke and fumes leapt up. Behind them the mountain was convulsed, great rents opened in its side. Slow rivers of fire came down the long slopes towards them. Soon they would be engulfed. A rain of hot ash was falling. They stood now, and Sam, still holding his master's hand, caressed it. He sighed.
"What a tale we've been in, Mr. Frodo, haven't we?" he said. "I wish I could hear it told. Do you think they'll say, 'Now comes the story of nine-fingered Frodo and the Ring of Doom'? And then everyone will hush, like we did, when in Rivendell they told us the tale of Beren One-Hand and the Great Jewel. I wish I could hear it, and I wonder how it'll go on after our part."
But even while he spoke so, to keep fear away until the very last, his eyes still strayed north, north into the eye of the wind, to where the sky far off was clear, as the cold blast, rising to a gale, drove back the darkness and the ruin of the clouds. And so it was that Gwaihir saw them with his keen, far-seeing eyes, as down the wild wind he came, and daring the great peril of the skies he circled in the air. Two small dark figures, forlorn, hand in hand upon a little hill, while the world shook under them, and gasped, and rivers of fire drew near.
And even as he espied them, and came swooping down, he saw them fall, worn out, or choked with fumes and heat, or stricken down by despair at last, hiding their eyes from death. Side by side they lay, and down swept Gwaihir, and down came Landrovel and Meneldor the swift, and in a dream, not knowing what fate had befallen them, the wanderers were lifted up and borne far away out of the darkness and the fire. When Sam awoke, he found that he was lying on some soft bed, but over him gently swayed wide beechen boughs, and through their young leaves sunlight glimmered, green and gold. All the air was full of a sweet mingled scent. He remembered that smell, the fragrance of Ithilien. "Bless me," he mused, "how long have I been asleep?" For the scent had borne him back to the day when he had lit his little fire under the sunny bank, and for a moment all else between was out of waking memory. He stretched and drew a deep breath. "Why, what a dream I've had," he muttered. "I am glad to wake." He sat up, and then he saw that Frodo was lying beside him, and slept peacefully, one hand behind his head, and the other resting upon the coverlet. It was the right hand, and the third finger was missing. Full memory flooded back, and Sam cried aloud, "It wasn't a dream." "Then where are we?" And a voice spoke softly behind,
"In the land of Ithilien, and in the keeping of the king, and he awaits you." With that Gandalf stood before him, robed in white, his beard now gleaming like pure snow in the twinkling of the leafy sunlight. "Well, Master Samwise, how do you feel?" he said. But Sam lay back, and stared with open mouth, and for a moment, between bewilderment and great joy, he could not answer. At last he gasped,
"Gandalf! I thought you were dead. But then I thought I was dead myself. Is everything sad going to come untrue? What's happened to the world?"
"A great shadow has departed," said Gandalf. And then he laughed, and the sound was like music, or like water in a parched land. And as he listened, the thought came to Sam that he had not heard laughter, the pure sound of merriment, for days upon days without count. It fell upon his ears like the echo of all the joys he had ever known. But he himself burst into tears. Then, as a sweet rain will pass down a wind of spring and the sun will shine out the clearer, his tears ceased, and his laughter welled up, and laughing he sprang from his bed.
"How do I feel?" he cried. "Well, I don't know how to say it. I feel, he waved his arms in the air, "I feel like spring after winter, and sun on the leaves, and like trumpets and harps and all the songs I've ever heard." He stopped, and he turned towards his master. "But how's Mr. Frodo?" he said. "Isn't it a shame about his poor hand? But I hope he's all right otherwise. He's had a cruel time."
"Yes, I'm all right otherwise," said Frodo, sitting up and laughing in his turn. "I fell asleep again waiting for you, Sam, you sleepy-head. I was awake early this morning, and now it must be nearly noon."
"Noon?" said Sam, trying to calculate.
"Noon of what day?" "The 14th of the new year," said Gandalf, "or, if you like, the 8th day of April in the Shire reckoning. But in Gondor the new year will always now begin upon the 25th of March, when Sauron fell, and when you were brought out of the fire to the king. He has tended you, and now he awaits you. You shall eat and drink with him. When you are ready, I will lead you to him."
"The king?" said Sam. "What king? And who is he?"
"The king of Gondor and lord of the western lands," said Gandalf. "And he has taken back all his ancient realm. He will ride soon to his crowning, but he waits for you."
"What shall we wear?"
said Sam, for all he could see was the old and tattered clothes that they had journeyed in, lying folded on the ground beside their beds.
"The clothes that you wore on your way to Mordor," said Gandalf. "Even the orc rags that you bore in the Blackland, Frodo, shall be preserved. No silks and linens, nor any armour or heraldry could be more honourable. but later I will find some other clothes, perhaps."
Then he held out his hands to them, and they saw that one shone with light. "What have you got there?" Frodo cried. "Can it be?"
"Yes, I brought your two treasures. They were found on Sam when you were rescued. The Lady Galadriel's gifts. Your glass, Frodo, and your box, Sam. You will be glad to have these safe again."
When they were washed and clad, and had eaten a light meal, the hobbits followed Gandalf. They stepped out of the beech grove in which they had lain, and passed on to a long green lawn, glowing in sunshine, bordered by stately, dark-leaved trees laden with scarlet blossom. Behind them they could hear the sound of falling water, and a stream ran down before them between flowering banks, until it came to a green wood at the lawn's foot, and passed then on under an archway of trees, through which they saw the shimmer of water far away.